call the meeting to order. We have a lot of testifiers today. We want to make sure, since we started just slightly late, we do have a quorum, actually, that had checked in, and some members have bills up in other committees. First of all, I want to let people know that the Senate members of the State Government Finance Committee of the Senate were planning on being here and having a joint hearing so they could also listen to our veterans groups and our military affairs groups, but due to the death of Senator Johnson's wife, the Senate was called into session this morning, and for obvious reasons, they will not be able to attend. So we will have a joint hearing with them at some point on another topic later, and I apologize for the groups that are here who would have liked to get your presentation out of the way in one shot with the House and Senate at one time. Because of the funeral arrangements, we just were not able to make that work, and it was a last-minute change. The clerk will take the roll. Representative Hilty, have you had a chance to read the minutes from yesterday?
I just did so, Mr. Chair.
And how did they look?
Just fine.
Wonderful. Representative Hilty moves approval of the minutes. Those in favor say aye. Opposed say nay. Minutes are approved. Our agenda for today is very simple. We are going to cover our military and veterans issues this morning. We will go in the order that you see on the agenda, and the first testifier is going to be our Adjutant General, General Larry Shelato, who is fresh back from a jet-lagged trip to Afghanistan. And General, we welcome you to our committee. If you could identify yourself and give us your testimony, it would be much appreciated.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Larry Shelato. I'm the Adjutant General of the State of Minnesota. Next slide, please. What I would like to do is go over, and what you see on the screen now is the topic points I'd like to talk about at this presentation. Next slide. One of the most common questions that you may hear is during this session is the difference between the Guard and the Reserve. And this is kind of Guard 101, but a lot of people get confused as to what happens. What you need to probably understand as a state representative, you have influence over the National Guard. You have no influence over the Reserve. When we take our oath, we swear dual allegiance as the National Guard. The active Army and the Army Reserve or the Reserve components give their oath of office to the Constitution of the United States and to the President of the United States. Every Minnesota National Guards person takes, in addition to that oath, an oath to the governor and to the Constitution of the State of Minnesota. So if ever there is a state emergency, the only ones that are able to be called out by the governor in support of a state active duty mission is the National Guard. And therefore, that is why we consider them to be different and why there is a special emphasis at the state level to take care of the National Guard. Your National Guard consists of the following components. We have two Air National Guard units, one in Duluth, the 148th Fighter Wing, and here in the Minneapolis airport area, the 133rd Airlift Wing. They comprise a total of 2,308 drilling airmen. The Army National Guard is made up of three major elements, the 34th Infantry Division, one of eight divisions in our country, National Guard divisions, our troop command, and Camp Ripley, a 53,000 jewel in the center of Minnesota. And that comprises on the Army side of 10,058. Also, you may hear there's what is referred to as a Joint Force Headquarters, and this is the new doctrine in the military, in the Department of Defense, to make sure that we never have incidents that occurred way back in the Iran-Contra days. Excuse me, not the Iran-Contra, but the hostage situation in Iran, where the joint forces did not communicate together and so forth. So they were very insistent that all forces work together. In my trip to Afghanistan, for example, there were Army, Air, Marines, U.S., British, Canadian forces all working together. And then the interoperability became a major issue. As the state of Minnesota, you are owner of 64 training facilities all across the state of Minnesota. They're strategically located for several reasons. One is for immediate response to state active duty. And second is to take full advantage of the recruiting opportunities in these areas. Of note, we find Minnesota to be a leading recruiter in the country. We're very, very proud of that. But also in the non-metro areas tends to be very strong in recruiting and retention. And I view this as a significant economic impactor to our communities all across the state of Minnesota. Next slide. The federal mission, just some of the things that I know you are aware of. Historically, there's a legacy issue, especially post-Vietnam, that the National Guard was the weekend warriors. Constitutionally, we are created, and the Department of Defense is required to ensure that we have a force, a militia, if you will, of ready to meet surge capabilities should there be a need by the President. And they are responsible for funding us for two weeks a year for training, annual training, plus 1 weekend a month. And that is where the weekend warrior got its genesis. However, now you will find that over 40% of the forces in the deployed arena are with the Guard and Reserve. As I came back and talking to senior leadership in Afghanistan, the most common phrase is you cannot tell the difference. The uniform is the same, and they're all doing the exact same missions. So that is why the rules have changed since 9/11. To illustrate this, the Minnesota National Guard since 9/11 has been in 30 different countries all across the world. Next slide. And since 9/11, how many of our people have been deployed or placed on federal active duty called by the President of the United States? Right after 2001, our Air Guard was capping the Pentagon, was capping the Minneapolis airport area. And by capping, I mean the F-16s were flying overhead to make sure no additional planes were flying out of their sector. That was a total of 375. The Air Guard continued to do that, and you see them with 325 people deployed. If you were to study the history since 9/11, you also then started to realize the buildup into Afghanistan and into Iraq. And in 2003, you start to see where the Army Guard is picking up. We had 5,059 Air Guard deployed, and we had 3,089 Army Guard soldiers serving overseas. The two primary areas were Bosnia and Kosovo, with elements in Afghanistan and Iraq. And then now in 2004, we have Air Guard of 236, and then 1,371. And I want to point out that these are the numbers that were activated during those years. For example, the Bosnian Kosovo groups flowed over the 2 years. But what's happening is the change of the locations. The dominant occupier, if you will, or the dominant site right now is Iraq. We have over 2,000 Minnesota Guards and Airmen deployed as we speak. Again, the primary location for them is Iraq, with about 100 currently in Afghanistan. And they're continually going through a revolving door. While some are being deployed out, some are coming home, and it's a daily count as the number of people we have deployed across the world. The next area is of importance to you specifically, because this is what your constituents will ask you about. Even though they will ask you about federal issues, they'll also ask you about the state one. And that is the state mission, and we, under the direction of the governor, will assist the citizens of Minnesota. In the country, nationwide, there's approximately about 800 to 900 guardsmen deployed on state active duty any given day. It ranges from flood duty, snow duty. You know, the Northeast got hit pretty hard. There's some states that will call in the guard to assist. We even had about 19 people out of Texas giving shots to cattle. So I don't know what it's all about or why it's necessary, but we never know exactly what it is. But if you take a look, in 2002, we had 1,095 man days. A man day is one person with one day's pay. So that could be 10 people at 100 days, or 100 people at 10 days, or 1,000 people at one day. But in 2002, we helped find a lost hunter. We did some firefighting, and we're up helping prevent floods up north near Roseau. In 2003, we helped do some searching, securing some critical facilities, doing a wildfire, and then also a national disaster. In 2004, again, just short of 1,200, Drew Shubin search nuclear plant security, airport security, fire suppression, so forth. So the issue is, and the general rule is, the local authorities, most commonly the sheriff of a county, will call the call the governor and ask for assistance. The most common question answered or given to that sheriff is, have you used all local resources? If they say yes, they have, and relating or connecting contiguous counties, then the governor then will consider. Because once the governor activates the National Guard, then the pay and allowance factors come into play and it becomes an expense. Also, for your information, as you see on this slide, is because of the national security issues, we have a quick reaction force and a rapid reaction force that is standby. I have over 150 young men and women primarily readily available to be positioned to go out the door anywhere in the state of Minnesota within 4 hours. I also have a follow-on unit of about 250 that will reinforce them within 24 hours. That's in federal expectation, and they've given us authorization to use some of their dollars to make sure that happens. What that means is we have people in the state of Minnesota driving around with their equipment in the trunk of their car, ready and available to assist the state of Minnesota. We've been very, very fortunate because the big issues have gone and passed without incident, i.e. the Democratic and Republican National Conventions, the election itself, and now the inauguration went without any significant events, so we're very fortunate. Some of the things that you have heard on the news, I just want you to be aware of. It's better to answer the question before it's asked. The body armor issue that was in the news about 2 or 3 weeks ago has been pretty much set aside. Everyone that we have deployed since then is getting full and current and up-to-date body armor. And I have the good fortune of wearing it for the last 5 days. It's heavy, it's cumbersome, and but you get used to it. The armored vehicles are there also. Our soldiers that are in harm's way specifically are falling upon new armored Humvees. The length of deployment has always been a concern, and the term that you'll most commonly hear and is being debated even as we speak is the definition of what's called boots on the ground. The standard policy right now is when we deploy soldiers is they will have 12 months boots on the ground. Boots on the ground means when they are in country. So if they're going to Afghanistan or Iraq, once they arrive in Afghanistan, the clock starts ticking, and it doesn't end until they leave Afghanistan. That does not include the upfront deployment or redeployment time. And so when we say 12 months on the ground, it's probably going to be anywhere from a 16 to 18-month deployment because they'll go to someplace like Fort Hood, and they'll go through what we call their theater-specific individual and unit training to make sure that they're fully trained and ready to go into that combat environment. So it's not just a 12-month deployment. It's more commonly about 18. And now there's the D word. And since my return, I've added to the D words. A lot of times you've heard in the media that there's going to be a draft, and we just don't think that's going to happen. There's just too many negatives. You've all worked in organizations where you had one person who wasn't very happy in how they can destroy that whole unit and morale and so forth. So we don't want to go there. The other D word now is deployment. And because of the rotations and so forth and the times with Afghanistan and Iraq and so forth, the typical troop on the ground overseas was asking, are we going to get redeployed? Will we go back again? And that's an unknown. That's being discussed and done at the national level at the Department of Defense. And as we know right now, I just don't know. And but I would just advise you that mathematically, conventional wisdom-wise, and so forth, something's going to have to happen to continue the operation. And in Afghanistan, things are amazingly going very, very well. And the key was the election and how peaceful that election did occur. There's still a lot of people running around the country. I saw more AK-47s you can shake a stick at. But things are going well, and the morale of the troops is just outstanding. They think they're serving a purpose, and that's very, very good. But they are concerned. What happened when I come back home? Will I go back in two or three more years? And we just don't know. What's important to this committee is the source of funding for the Minnesota National Guard. And as you see, 96% of the dollars for the Minnesota National Guard comes from the feds. And we are a major influx of federal dollars to the state. State expenditures are in the $12.4 million zone. Of that state budget, just short of $6 million is used for maintenance and training facilities. $1.8 is used for general support, and $4.9 is being used for enlistment incentives. And these, the thing I want to just point out to this committee on the enlistment incentives, because this is the topic point you're going to get a lot of discussion on through the session, is these are pass-through dollars for the National Guard. In other words, what I'm doing is I'm just a banker for you to make sure that those enlistment incentives go to the proper airman or soldier that you've wanted it to go to. It does not build anything for me or add anything to it other than the value that we are creating a very strong, educated workforce for the state of Minnesota. And then we have set aside $75,000 for emergency services. Again, that is should the governor call up the National Guard. This is just a fund that you arbitrarily set to $75,000. It could grow or be less than that, but historically it's been more than that. What you'll see in this session from the governor is the request for the 100% tuition reimbursement, plus funding for a reenlistment bonus. When we place our soldiers on active duty, that there'd be an income exemption for that. And then there's some conformity, if you will, to the Federal Military Family Relief Act, which makes some of the Guard expenses deductible on the federal, on the state as well as the federal tax forms. The 2006-2007 budget, you will see for training, maintenance for training facilities, there is no change requested. For general support, there is no change requested. And in the our traditional $10 million for enlistment incentives. We are looking at the governor's proposal is looking at an increase of $5.4 million per year. That's broken down into two separate categories. One is a $3.85 million for tuition relief, which takes it from an 80% tuition reimbursement based on the University of Minnesota to 100%, plus a $1.5 million for reenlistment bonuses. One of the key issues that we are seeing in the Minnesota National Guard, we will have the largest number of combat veterans in the Minnesota National Guard since post-World War II in Vietnam. We're going to have, and as you visit with the veterans groups these days, you're going to have the largest number of returning veterans since World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. This is extremely important, but more importantly is Minnesota has been very successful overseas as far as, knock on wood, the lack of people getting hurt. And that is because I attribute it to strong leadership. And it's very, very important that we collect these young, growing leaders who are growing exponentially over there in the real world situation, if you will. And we need to retain them to build an even stronger, more viable National Guard for the future. Our bonding requests remain unchanged from last year, with asset preservation at $4 million and our life safety at $1 million. And then what you will see in this as far as our agency policy initiatives, we're looking for some carry-forward authority for our facilities management. Simply saying is I don't want an environment where you spend it or lose it type of decisions at an end of a fiscal year. I want to be able to say, hey, we want to make some decisions, and I'd like to use part of my dollars of this budget year and the increase from next budget year to make a legitimate, solid improvement versus saying, you know, if I don't spend it, I have to lose it. So simple carry forward is what we're asking, language. We want the Army board change. It's kind of strange, but you have to be an officer to be on the Army board. Some of our strongest leaderships are in the enlisted rank. We just like that changed so that we have some strong community leaders that were in the enlisted side of the house. They can serve on the Army board also. And we want to be able to have the authority to rent facilities of Camp Ripley. I'd love to have Camp Ripley become more of an income center than it is right now. We do a lot of training with the Department of Transportation and with the State Highway Patrol, but we have an outstanding facility, an education center, and we can use that as an income center. That would be great. And then some retiree language. We're looking at that, that they get some benefits dealing with their retirement. And I was told to keep it quick and short because we have, you have a lot of presenters, but this is really what we're about. We're very, very proud, and we do have a short little video. I ask your indulgence on this, but it probably, what I've talked about, what you're faced with is the dollars, the number crunching, and so forth, and I'd like to take the objective side away for a moment and take a look at the subjective side and of the families and the people that are impacted, because these are your constituents, and I can just tell you that their performance overseas is nothing but exemplary. I have yet to have on my trip over there someone who just started beating on me because why are we here and so forth. They all feel very, very positive in what they are doing. And probably even more important, and the common theme I give to all the veterans, it is imperative that the state of Minnesota welcome these people back home and thank them for their service. Now I'd like to show you what's happening to them and their families.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone. Up and at 'em bright and early, I'm all business in my suit. Yeah, I'm dressed up for success, from my head down to my boots. I don't do it for the money, there's bills that I can't pay. I don't do it for the glory, I just do it anyway. Providing for our futures, my responsibility. Yeah, I'm real good on the pressure, being all that I can be. I can't call in sick on Mondays when the weekend's been too strong. I just work straight through the holidays, sometimes all night long. You can bet that I stand ready when the wolf growls at the door. Hey, I'm solid, hey, I'm steady, hey, I'm true down to the core. And I will always do my duty, no matter what the price. I've counted up the cost, I know the sacrifice. Boy, and I don't want to die for you, but if dying's asking me, I'll bear that cross with honor, cause freedom don't come free. American soldier, an American, beside my brothers and my sisters, I will proudly take a stand. When liberty's in jeopardy, I will always do what's right. I'm out here on the front lines, sleep in peace tonight. American soldier, I'm an American. Oh,
Seifert, I'd like to proudly report to you that the Minnesota National Guard is ready, it's well trained, and it's relevant, and it's serving this country in an excellent fashion. Subject to your questions.
Thank you, General. Members of the committee, do we have questions? And we'll get a list started. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wasn't quite sure what you meant by you said the enlistment incentives went into training. Now, is that money that actually goes into the cost of training them, or is it? I didn't know what you meant by it goes into training the workforce in Minnesota.
Representative General, I apologize if I led that. The enlistment's incentives go to the soldier or airman in paying their college tuition. Okay. Now the re-enlistment incentive is the incentive of tuition assistance. Is that your question?
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chairman, just following up. Yes, does it, both the enlistment and the re-enlistment incentive, does it end up going to, like you say, for reimbursement, or like they pay the tuition and then they get paid for that, or goes through them to go to the training facility or something like that? Or
Representative General, Mr. Chair, I used to be college president, and what would happen is the guys would come in, sign up, do everything normal that they would do to be a student at one of the Michigan system, for example. Then independently, what they would do is when they get their transcripts and so forth, and they would send it in, and based on that and their successful performance, they get then reimbursed for their expenses. So we do not see the money, either the college or the military. We don't get it and then use it. It is the money that goes through the soldier in reimbursement for their direct costs and books and so forth for their college education.
Representative Mullery, Mr. Chairman, I think I understand, just to clarify, that they're not getting paid just because they're going to school, but they're getting paid to... because they have expenses to go to school, is that it? Or
well, you're reimbursing them. You're reimbursing them for their expenses to go to college. What you're doing is you're a financial aid system in a sense for people that are in the National Guard, and as long as they're making satisfactory performance in their education, they will get reimbursed for their expenses up to that University of Minnesota tuition rate.
Representative De La Forest, did you have a question?
I did, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Good morning, General. General, I had a question about the op-tempo for the Minnesota Guard. What do you see for the trend line for the next 24, 36 months? Do you think that there will be more deployments for the Guard, less deployments, about the same? And second, do you have any data or do you have an opinion about how this increased op-tempo has affected recruiting and retention for the Minnesota Guard?
General?
Representative Chair, that's the million-dollar question. Do I see the op tempo increasing or staying the same right now? I would. I really don't know. However, the reality is, for example, the things, the gains in Afghanistan, for example, are even in the last year have been exponential, and it's clearly obvious we're going to be there for a. 3-4 more years minimum, and then whether or not we can turn this over to, for example, there's a big push in Afghanistan now, what they call the ISAF, which is the UN conglomerate of forces, Brits, Romanians, so forth. So hopefully we can turn some of that over and then downsize it to our logistical support. Iraq is going to be probably longer, and the center of gravity is going to be what happens in this election. If this election goes as well as the Afghan one, I think there'll be significant improvements. Because right now, I think the key is going to be when does the Iraqi people take ownership for their own country. And I think the election is going to determine whether they're willing to or not willing to do so. In turn, we do know that virtually all of the National Guard, at least on the what we call the combat arms, have been deployed at some time. Unfortunately, right after 9/11, some of our lead or better trained, or at least better funded units were immediately deployed on active duty, but they ended up just guarding active duty bases. And then, and I think a lot of people underestimated the duration of the Iraqi war. They thought that the, I think the war, you know, the combat phase of it was, you know, not that long. It's the insurgency phase that I think a lot of people underestimated. And the amount of boots on the ground that we need to take care of that is much, much higher. So do I anticipate that I'll get more calls from the Department of Defense to deploy more soldiers? The answer is yes. Right now we're stabilized at about 2,000 people in that flow. It's gone through the combat arms. We've gone through now our logistical support people. For example, the unit, we had an appointment at Little Falls, where 40% of them were female. And but again, overall, the total National Guard has deployed less than 60% of its total force. So, but again, it's a different MOSs. What's most interesting is we're finding is I have air defense artillery people that are being trained as infantry doing presence patrol in downtown Baghdad. I have field artillery people being trained as infantrymen, presence patrols, going to Iraq. I have armor people taken out of their tanks being trained as infantrymen going to their duties over in Iraq and so forth. So there's a lot of people and a lot of things being changed. But it's not over. And we'll be called upon. And I just saw a recent report. The Air Force and the Navy have the best recruiting in our history because they are perceived to be the least in conflict. The Marines and the Army are being hurt because they're the ones that are doing the frontline work. So, however, Minnesota still remains the number one recruiting state in the country.
Further questions from committee members? Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, General, welcome. The question, though, is needs to be is what is your history? And you may not have a long history of this, but in the last two, 3 years of when we've seen our guys kind of change their expectations, I guess, or change to more active duty and away from the weekend warfare yeah. type of thing, your re-enlistment of people who have you seen a change in that percentage that are re-enlisting or recruiting into the Guard?
General?
Representative, Mr. Chair, that's an interesting question. I've been asked that every, you know, since day one, you know, because the conventional wisdom always has been, well, recruiting is going to go down and retention is going to go down the tubes. That has not happened. Again, our retention is, our recruiting is as strong as it's ever been. And our retention is surprisingly equal to or sometimes stronger in deployed units than those that were not deployed.
Mr. Chairman, General, is that because when once they're deployed and back, they feel that they don't have to go back again?
Yeah, that's the coffee shop discussion points.
Right,
that
I'm asking.
Yeah, and but it's not happening in some ways. I have seen some of the trends where we've seen an increase in the retirement of some of our senior officers and NCOs. And the most common explanation is there was no way in the world I was not going to go. I'm not going to serve for 20, 30 years. Then when the first time they call me, I don't go. So they come back and they say, no, you know, I've done it. I did my thing. I paid my dues. I'm going to step aside. Because I will tell you, over there, I hate to say this, but one of the lessons I learned is that this is a young person's occupation. I mean, carrying 35 pounds just in one, the armor alone, then you put another 50-pound rucksack on top of it, walking around with 85, 90 pounds on your back all day, is not a senior citizen type of, and I call myself senior citizen, put in perspective, type of occupation. It's demanding, it's 24/7, and yet a large number of them over there, there's going to be two dynamics. First of all, when they're over there, do they feel that what they're doing is important?
so far things that I'm getting is yes it is. And I would ask you, anytime you get an opportunity to talk to a returning person, to ask them that question. You know, what do you think? What are you seeing over there? And second is how we treat them when they come home. You know, I'm a Vietnam vet, and I was forced to shut up for 25 years and not talk about it because it was socially unacceptable. And now they're coming home, and they're being treated like heroes. They're well-respected. This country is embracing them. And that psychological difference is so significant that it's absolutely imperative. And that's why something as simple as these initiatives that say, when you come home, we're going to take care of you. We're proud of you. You know, it's a shame you had to go. It was tough, but you answered the call.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I asked that question for a reason, because of the governor's initiatives, and I'm not necessarily against them, but I want to make sure that we're making sure that we're expending money for the purpose of retention and recruitment. And he has going from 80% to 100%. And I was history around here when we initiated the college reimbursement, and it proved to be an extremely good retention. And so I asked that question, if 80% is doing the job of retention, or if we need to boost it up to 100%, or the same thing with the bonuses. You know, is that important? Is it a retention tool? Is it a reenlistment tool? Or is it just a thank you tool? And I want to separate those. They may be both important as well.
Representative General, let me just qualify that. First of all, I had the pleasure of being with the governor both in Bosnia and Kosovo. And I saw it at the town hall meetings where the people got up and said, what about this? Mm-hmm. So what you're hearing from the governor was asked for by the soldiers on the ground. And the reenlistment bonus, ironically, was a middle career person finally got up and says, you know, what about me? What about my family? You know, because I'm at that point in my career where the boss is looking, either I'm going to be moving up or I'm going to be level and this type of thing. And they have to make some serious career decisions. And I think the governor was, he heard the message loud and clear. So I think that's important. Now, and I'd like to throw another dynamic into this, too. We've gotten several calls from major employers across the state that would like to have access to our people, or at least let us know that they are looking for good people. And I want you to take the profile of a typical National Guards person. First of all, they're high school educated minimum. Two, the majority of them have some type or are going to college. Three, they have been drug tested and so forth, and they know they're drug free. Four, they've gone through some advanced training on the military side, so they know how to be both a follower and a leader. And I suppose lastly is they have life experiences beyond just living in a dorm. So they like that type of work profile. And so if the state were to invest money in the future leadership of the state of Minnesota, I think this is a viable avenue.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me make one statement. That is, one of my great friends, when I had the opportunity to attend the Kennedy School at Harvard, had just come out from commanding as a captain of a boat, a ship.
Yeah.
Yes, a boat. A boat on the Lake Superior, ships in the ocean. And when he found out I was from Minnesota, he said, give me a crew from Minnesota and I won't even have to be there.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. General, going back to your presentation on state mission, I noticed that in your list of services provided in 2004, it lists nuclear power plant security and airport security, mm-hmm. which does not appear in the previous years, and I was wondering, is that something that was that a service that was provided by someone else previously? Did the circumstances change?
Representative Chair, the issue is what we're finding is the circumstances have changed, and the new dynamic is Homeland Security and the Department of Homeland Security and so forth, and this is also becoming a national discussion point. It's not uncommon for well, as you saw, where the national security threat level was heightened, and there were concerns with national intelligence that there would be incidents occurring. For example, Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport is the sixth largest commuter airport in the country. As I flew back from Amsterdam yesterday, coming in here, I would say over half the people on that plane were foreign nationals. You know, that were going through a whole series of screens and so forth. We are a major throughput of transportation of people from foreign countries, whether or not they stop in Minnesota, but just the study of the Minneapolis airport would tell you that airport security is becoming an extremely important aspect, especially coming to the States. On the power plant, too, there may have been intelligence that says, hey, we want the heightened security. Now, the reason I'm saying this is changing, and on the national level, a lot of states are saying, hey, time out. You raise the alert level, and you've got these major assets, infrastructure you want protected, then you expect us to protect them. So there is discussion now being at the federal level to say, all right, can the governor then be reimbursed for those costs? And that's still up in the clouds, if you will. But the key elements that have generated that discussion were with the G8 summit in Florida, commanded by a National Guards person, the Democratic National Convention, commanded by a National Guard person, the Republican National Convention, again, but they're a mix of local, state, guard, and active duty people involved. And then finally the feds, you know, the New York said, we can't afford this, and Georgia said, we can't afford it. So they're starting to take serious looks at who will get reimbursed for that, to include the ability to make some of those decisions in advance and then get the reimbursement. It's sort of like disaster relief in some way. After disaster, we can apply for it, but I think they're trying to shorten that timeline.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty,
we need to move along the questions a little bit because we have a pretty long roster to go and we got to be done by 10.
So yes or no answer. Joe, I think it's probably safe to assume that no reimbursement has taken place to this point.
Representative Chair, I don't have the answer. I do not know.
You, Representative Pepin?
General, I just want to say that I'm from Little Falls. And my dad was a 35-year employee at Camp Ripley, so I truly appreciate all the good work the Guard does. And my question is, I'm intrigued by the policy initiative to rent facilities at Camp Ripley, and I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. To whom would you be renting the facilities to? And what would be the revenue impact of that?
Representative, Mr. Chair, we really don't know. The Camp Ripley commander, Colonel Weaver, is actively involved with that. We're looking at other state agencies. We would like the State Highway Patrol has found that to be a very viable option as they increase their throughput. We have just done some initial training through the Department of Transportation for snowplow training and so forth, and that's proven to be very successful. We want to expand that, and then we hope that because of that, others will take advantage of their facilities and so forth to use it. We're just at the infancy of the marketing phase of it. As I'm sure you're pretty well aware of, sure. Camp Ripley is really one of the best-kept secrets in the state of Minnesota.
Absolutely.
Everyone drives by it, but they don't know what it is.
Yeah, I was kind of curious about the security.
That would be, and again, the security issues can be handled, I think, well with an organized group. Who's coming? Get it rostered. Have the people. So I'm not so worried about the security element of it. It's just getting them there, and then because it is truly a state asset, therefore, if we can bring the Department of Transportation there and they save dollars, it's a win-win for both of us.
Wonderful.
Okay, thank you, General. We appreciate your testimony. We appreciate your service and the service of those who are serving under you. And next, we are going to bring up Commissioner Puglisi. Who is our Acting Commissioner of Veterans Affairs, and we'll have I know potentially maybe 10 minutes, Commissioner. We're going to try to fit our veterans group in.
No problem, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead and introduce yourself and proceed.
Chairman Seifert, members of the committee and staff, good morning. My name is Michael Puglisi. I'm the Acting Commissioner for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today about the Department of Veterans Affairs. I will keep my remarks brief and give you a general look at the department budget and then answer any questions you may have. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs was created in 1943 to meet the needs of Minnesota's veterans, their dependents, and survivors by assisting them in securing those state and federal veterans benefits to which they are entitled. We accomplish this mission by providing leadership and direction to the veteran community, as well as offering a myriad of benefits and services. Veterans Affairs is a small agency. Currently, we have 34 employees, which are divided between our claims office located in Fargo-Moorhead, our claims office located in St. Paul, our State Veterans Cemetery located in Little Falls, and our headquarters office located in the Veterans Service Building. These four offices serve the over 460,000 veterans of Minnesota, their dependents, and survivors, with the assistance of the 109 men and women who comprise the Corps of County Veterans Service Officers, as well as the representatives of the Minnesota's congressionally chartered veterans organizations. The Department of Veterans Affairs budget recommendation for fiscal year 06-07 consists of $8.076 million from the state's general fund. This amount reflects a 3% reduction from the department's fiscal year 04-05 budget and will be divided between the department's three program areas as follows. The benefits program, which accounts for 44% of the department's budget, or $3.564 million. The services program, which accounts for 22% of the budget, or $1.746 million. And the operations program, which makes up 34% of the budget, or $2.766 million. I'm going to mention each of the services found under each program area, but we'll only expound upon a few of the more significant ones. Please feel free to interrupt me if you would like me to discuss a particular one in more depth or if you have a question. The benefits program, which accounts for 44% of the budget, provides and oversees financial assistance to needy veterans in the form of direct emergency financial assistance to veterans, their dependents, and survivors. Provisions are for shelter and utilities, optical and dental benefits, and cash grants for food and personal needs. Under this program, we also have veterans preference enforcement, vocational rehabilitation services, educational assistance for veterans, and the homeless veterans program, which provides homeless or at risk of being homeless veterans and their families with services such as food, shelter, needed medical programs, and links to all veterans' benefits. The services program accounts for 22% of the department's budget and includes claims representation, fiduciary guardianship services, and veterans outreach. The claims offices located at Fort Snelling and Fargo-Moorhead provide direct claims representation before the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and the Board of Veterans Appeals to maximize the amount of benefits and services received by Minnesota veterans, their dependents, and survivors. The claims office at Fort Snelling also provides environmental hazards information and assistance. In federal fiscal year 04, our claims offices were successful in obtaining over $180 million in direct payments to Minnesota veterans and their dependents through the federal government. In addition, many Minnesota veterans also received millions of dollars in medical care through the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Medical Centers as a result of the claims office's efforts. Our guardianship program provides financial case management to services to incompetent veterans, their dependents, and survivors who may be vulnerable to exploitation by others or by their own inabilities to manage their funds. The goal is to assist the guardianship clientele in maintaining a lifestyle as independent as possible. Our operations program accounts for 34% of the budget and includes the duties and responsibilities of the Commissioner's Office, the County Veterans Service Officer Operational Improvement Grant Process, wherein County Veterans Service Officers, if eligible, may receive grants from the Department to help improve the services and the efficiency with which they provide these services to their county veteran families. The County Veterans Service Officer Certification Process also falls under this program, as well as the Bronze Star Brave Marker Program, Information Technology, the State Veterans Cemetery, which is located near Little Falls and has been open for the interment of veterans and eligible family members since 1994. Over 1,450 interments have taken place during this time. A federal grant of $3.6 million was recently received for renovations, which have made our cemetery one of the most attractive veteran cemeteries in the United States. Veterans receive a free burial with free perpetual maintenance of the grave site. Also under our operations program is planning and fundraising for veterans memorials, our military discharge repository, the state approving agency, and the Recently Separated Veterans Program, which is a collaborative effort with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. When veterans separate from active duty, if they identify Minnesota as their home of record, the department will receive their discharge papers from the Department of Defense. Upon receipt of their discharge papers, information including a welcome home letter and relevant transitional information will be mailed within 7 working days. Besides thanking these fine young men and women for their dedicated service to our state and nation and welcoming them home to Minnesota, we will be providing them with helpful information on veterans' benefits and services, as well as Department of Economic Security programs and services. This letter also directs them to their local county veteran service officer, where they can receive additional services and assistance. While budgeting, financial transaction, human resource management, affirmative action, MAPS, and CIMA 4 transaction are also processed within this program. We also have two change items for your consideration. The first is being brought forward on behalf of the Vietnam Veterans of America and is in the amount of $5,000. This additional amount would raise their state appropriation to $20,000 annually and is used to staff and maintain their claims offices. The second change item is a rent adjustment in the amount of $45,000. In closing, I would like to add that with the advent of the global war on terrorism comes an increase in the overall number of veterans, especially disabled veterans, returning home to Minnesota. We are working closely with Military Affairs and the County Veteran Service Officers in all 87 counties to ensure that these men and women, upon returning home, receive whatever assistance they require. As such, any reduction to the Department's budget would greatly diminish our ability to continue to meet the needs of our current and future veterans. I'd like to thank this committee for their past and present support of veterans. I look forward to working with you all, and once again, wish to thank you for the opportunity to discuss the Department of Veterans Affairs with you today.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Do we have questions from Representative Mulley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the first thing I'd say is good luck on trying to fill Jeff Olson's shoes. He's kind of a pretty famous out there among veterans. Everywhere I go, they always talk about him. But a question on, I'm looking at the new handout, and which is coincides with what you were testifying with on dollars, and I'm looking at the handout in our packet. And benefits coincides, $3.564 million. Then I look at services, and your handout and what you said, I think, was $1.746 million. And the handout in the packet has $5.246 million. And then for operations, you had $2.766 million, I believe, and this has $3.251 million. I can't figure out what's going on there.
Commissioner, is that difference between state and federal or pass-through funds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that does play a part of it. There's also considered in there is the money that is the guardians in our guardian program. Their money's included in that. That's their personal money that shows up in these budget pages as well.
Mm-hmm. Representative Waller?
Mr. Chairman, what can you explain in detail? First of all, the Guardian program, what is that? But how does that figure into both services and operations then? And that's a huge difference from 1.7 up to 5.2 and from 2.7 to 3.2.
Mr. Chair, Representative. The guardianship program is a program that provides financial case management to incompetent veterans. The amount of money that they receive on a monthly basis, be it from Social Security or from VA compensation, is put into an account, and that's the money that our guardianship caseworkers use to pay their rent, their mortgage payments, whatever bills they have. That shows up under our services area. So that's what makes up, that's what increases the number in our services.
Representative Mulley, did you see page 11 of the detail? There's some discussion on there about the guardianship clients and so forth.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't aware that I thought I know about the guardianship program because I used to have a lot of clients that were in it, but it used to be through a Bishop Whipple building out in at Fort Snow, and I thought it was a direct federal program. I didn't realize it was a state one, but okay, is that the difference between most the difference between the 1.7 and the 5.2? But then what about the difference on the Well, that's the first question. The second question is the difference between the 2.7 and the 3.2 on the operations.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, so you're asking what's the increase amount showing under the operations program raising it from the 2.766? Okay.
What page are you on, Representative Mulley? Are you on the detail sheet?
Mr. Chairman, I'm on page 2 of this handout.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a large amount of that in the services is the state approving agency, which is a federal program, which is being reflected under that, so that's not part of the state appropriation. Some of the other money is money that's being obtained for Veterans Memorial, the donations that we're receiving, that's being accounted under there as well.
That's under the, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulder. That's under the operations then?
That falls under operations as well, yes.
Representative Mulder.
Mr. Chairman, one other, just to follow. You mentioned the World War II Memorial. At one time, we passed a law authorizing license plates where the proceeds went to, I believe it was the World War II Memorial, I think. Whatever happened to that?
Representative Mulder, we are still receiving the money coming in from public safety on that. It's generating currently around $8,000 a quarter, and that is going towards the World War II Memorial. After the World War II Memorial is constructed, that will be used for the perpetual maintenance of the memorial.
Okay. Commissioner, I just have a brief question. On page 2, the vet's golf bonus is 0 and 04, and then it starts coming online at 10, 10, 10, goes up to, it stays at 10. Is that just coming online now? Is that how that was approved? I remember it being voted on some years ago.
Mr. Chair, that money reflects carryover money. We still have a few outstanding applications that need to be perfected by the applicants. We expect that there will be some that are still going to need to be paid. So that money is carried forward so that we will have the funds to pay them when they do perfect their applications.
Okay, great. Any other questions before we bring the veterans groups forward? Thank you, Commissioner. We appreciate your time this morning. Next on the agenda, we have Thomas Hansen and James Hasselgrave of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. For staff and for members, if you would keep, we have a more detailed budget document than probably what the governor's office and finance has been sending over. So we would ask that you keep these in the packets for Mr. Miller and Mr. Jordahl. We're going to be referencing these, and we're going to be more detailed in our line items this year than probably any other committee. And we want to make sure that we keep these, and we'll try to either keep them in a big, thick packet, or we'll try to bundle them somehow. Chairman Haas used to have things burned onto a CD, and I think at the end of the day we found out that nobody used it, so we're not going to burn things onto CDs. It's not as convenient. I like to read stuff on the paper rather than computer. So if members demand a CD, we can do that, but I kind of like to read stuff this way.
Chairman, I agree with you, and hopefully you can kind of come up with a packet that we can keep these in probably a three-ring binder or some way.
Well, we talked to supply Mr. Jordahl and see if we can round that up. Okay. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
You identify yourself, your position, and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Tom Hansen. I'm the director of the VFW Claims Office at Fort Snelling. I have with me this morning Al Lair, our Department Legislative Chairman, and James Hasselgrave, our Adjutant Quartermaster, State Adjutant Quartermaster. We appear this morning, obviously, to provide testimony if necessary and answer any questions you might have relative to our request for an annual appropriation from the state to operate our claims operation out at Fort Snelling. Essentially, what we do is provide representation to veterans who have designated the Veterans of Foreign Wars as their representative in front of the VA. and represent those veterans in the claims process in attempting to secure any entitlements that they may be in receipt of from the Department of Veterans Affairs. We have an annual budget of $697,000, and of that, $287,000 of that budget represents what it takes for us to run my office out at Fort Snelling. We, in the past, had been in receipt of a $55,000 grant annually from the state. We have asked for an increase in that amount to $85,000. And our justification for that, essentially, is that we continue to have an increase in veterans, returning veterans that we provide assistance to, and as well, we're thinking that we save the state of Minnesota a lot of money. At the same time, we're bringing a lot of revenue, federal revenue, into the state by our efforts. The returning veterans, as the Adjutant General testified, are going to be coming back to Minnesota, and unfortunately, the body armor that he talked about is bringing us back a lot more injured warriors than previous wars. So I think that our services are going to be more essential in the future than they have been in the past, even. So I don't know if there's anything more that you want me to explain to you this morning. I know you're pressed for time. We do have an agency profile that's been printed and provided to everybody or every member of the committee, and I don't want to sit here and read that for you. So I'll entertain any questions that you might have, if there are any.
Do we have any questions from the committee members? Will there be testimony from the other gentlemen, or are they here for questions mainly?
Just for questions that they may have the answers to.
I have a question that's kind of offline from the budget that I would like to ask.
Chairman.
Okay. Who's the legislative affairs person for VFW? Is that Mr. Lair?
Correct.
Okay. I had a question from another member of the legislature who knew that we were having the VFW coming in, and they had asked the question about the no smoking bill that is being presented to the legislature that has VFW clubs included in it, private clubs and so forth. They asked me if you've taken a position on this, and I said I don't know, but I know you're coming in to testify, and I'd be happy to ask if your veterans have taken any type of legislative position on this, and if you've gotten any input from people.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Al Lair. I reside at 910 Corey Lane, St. Cloud, Minnesota. I'm the legislative sheriff of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, and also participate with the consortium of veterans organization called the Commander's Task Force. To my knowledge, I don't believe, Mr. Chairman and members, that any discussion has taken place in regard to a smoking ban as far as the VFW is concerned. Now, I can't speak for the other organizations in the consortium. But as far as the state VFW is concerned, we have not addressed that issue.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll let them know that you haven't been for or against it. It's just something that they were curious about. And you don't know that there's going to be any discussion between now and I don't know when it will be voted on.
Well, I suppose, Mr. Chairman and members, that if any discussion would have taken place, we had our state midwinter conference just 2 weeks ago at the Marriott, downtown Marriott in Minneapolis, and we had a rather lengthy legislative committee meeting, and not once was that issue brought forward.
So. I was just told that it's up in committee today at 10:15, so if there's any veterans here that are for or against that idea, you can go as an individual, as a citizen of the state, and not necessarily representing anyone, and testify in room 10 at 10:15 today. Apparently, ironically, I didn't even know that it was up that quick. It's up today.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, I believe that some discussion regarding VFW has been invoked with the issue in Bloomington, Minnesota, where there is a, I believe, a motion to deal with the smoking ban in the city of Bloomington. And I think, if I recall correctly, the Veterans of Foreign Wars post in Bloomington has had some discussions with their city officials in that regard.
Okay. Very good. Members of the committee, do we have any other questions on legislative issues that the VFW represent De La Forest?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question that's probably best directed to staff. Perhaps Mr. Shepherd, does the American Legion receive state funding, and if so, do they perform similar duties to the VFW and for purposes for which we allocate state funding?
Mr. Shepherd?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Roberts, Ms. Roberts may be able to answer that as well. I don't think offhand the American Legion does. There are other groups who are next on the agenda who do perform services, claims processing services for veterans. But one of the witnesses that we know, too, is the...
Mr. Chairman, Representative, historically the American Legion has had their representation offered to veterans through the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. The other service organizations, such as the VFW, have opted to operate their own operation to provide representation for veterans who have designated those service organizations as their representative.
Any other questions from committee members? Thank you for coming in this morning. We appreciate your service to our country. Next on the agenda is Al Holton from the Order of the Purple Heart, who's with us this morning. And we've got Larry German and Dave Schrock also. Good morning, gentlemen. You can introduce yourself and your position and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Al Holton. I'm the department commander for the Military Order of the Purple Heart of the state of Minnesota. Along with me this morning is my adjutant, Larry German. He's the department adjutant, and Dave Schrock, who's the National Service Officer at Fort Snelling. The Military Order of the Purple Heart is a congressionally chartered veterans organization established by Public Law 85761. We are authorized to represent veterans, their dependents, widows, orphans before the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and assist them in their claims for federal benefits. Our organization is exclusively made up of combat wounded veterans of all wars. We provide free assistance to all veterans regardless of their service or military records. Our National Service Office is located at Fort Snelling in the Bishop Henry Whipple Building, Room 183A. The staff consists of a National Service Officer and an Administrative Assistant. The National Service Office's primary objective is to assist veterans and their families with the preparation of claims for federal benefits with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. The National Service Officer also oversees processing procedures of claims filed with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. The type of claims consists of compensation claims based on service-connected disabilities, non-service-connected disability claims for wartime veterans, educational benefits, vocational rehabilitation benefits, application for home loans, applications for insurance policies, and insurance claims. We assist veterans with the preparation for military discharge, reviews, and upgrades. This also includes any applications for the correction of military records. The National Service Officer assists veterans with the appellate process when the veteran disagrees with a decision of the Department of Veterans Affairs. The appellate process consists of timely filing of appeals, representation at the hearing, either at the local jurisdiction hearing officer or Board of Veterans Appeals hearing officer. The Military Order of the Purple Heart National Headquarters is located in Springfield, Virginia. Also, it provides representation of veterans at the Board of Veterans Appeals and the Court of Veterans Appeals in Washington, D.C. The National Service Office works together with county veteran service officers and makes referrals to other programs that the State of Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs administers for veterans and their families. We continue to provide service through outreach programs on a weekly basis. The National Service Officer staffs an office at St. Paul Resource Center located on 2480 University Avenue. We also participate in programs that assist homeless veterans, such as the Minnesota Stand Down for Veterans and their families in need. In addition, the Military Order of the Purple Heart has a hospital representative who has an office at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. where he assists veterans with admission to the VA Medical Center, the state veterans homes, and other nursing homes throughout the state. The hospital representative assists veterans with their preparation of claims and forwards these claims to the National Service Officer for processing. The veterans we represent before the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs can, in part, measure our success. Currently, the Military of Purple Heart represents 862 Minnesota veterans, which 152 are brand new this year. In the past year, which is 2003, our service office recovered approximately $1,990,000 for veterans benefits, which averages out. This past year, we've seen an increase with the hiring of a new service officer and retirement of our old one from July 1 through January 1, 2005. We have seen $2.4 million collected already from federal benefits for veterans in our organization. With the federal law changes in VA benefits, our work is assisting veterans continues to increase over the years. The appropriation from the state of Minnesota allows the military or the Purple Heart the ability to continue to provide quality service to veterans in Minnesota. We are grateful for this appropriation and will continue to mandate the legislature to use these funds to serve veterans of Minnesota. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I would thank you for allowing us to appear before you today and be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Mulley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You said that you represent all veterans, whatever their military record. Now, is that all veterans with a Purple Heart, or is it all veterans?
We're the same as all service organizations, Mr. Chairman, Representative. All service organizations out there represent anybody, regardless of membership, to or ability, or that can belong to the Legion, VFW, American, or the Purple Heart, but will represent all of them.
Representative Mulley.
So, Mr. Chairman, somebody in the room that is a veteran, they could go to you even if they don't have a Purple Heart.
Absolutely.
And then, just a follow-up, what determines then, I mean, I know, for instance, up in County, and I know we have an excellent veteran service or department there, run by Mel Schoen, who does an excellent job, and then there's, the VFW apparently has this, you have it. Why would somebody go to you versus them, or them versus you? And can they go to all of them at once, or how do? I just don't know how you all work together. Are you? What if I went to all? Maybe there's eight of you that do the same thing, and if I went to all eight, would I have all of you working for me then better? Or?
Mr. Chairman, let me ask that by my civilian job. I'm a county veteran service officer also. And when usually somebody comes into my office or walks in one of these offices, they do it a preferential thing. Now, whether they're active in the VFW back home, the Purple Heart, the American Legion, the DAV, whatever, they have a preference sometimes who they know or who they'd want to work with. And that's what all of us keep is an open door thing that they can choose who they'd rather work with. And some change over the years if they aren't satisfied with the results of this claim or they didn't work hard enough, whatever. But I mean, we all are open to anybody that comes to serve.
Representative
Mulley, just do they work now? For instance, I think you mentioned homeless. If I remember right. I can't think of his last name. Jimmy something is very active.
In time, sir. Yeah.
Very active in the homeless veterans. Would you, if somebody came to you, would you refer them to him, or do you do it directly, or try to work directly?
Well, it depends on where the individual, Mr. Chairman, where they showed up at. It would, you know, they could go to the federal building where Mr. Schrock has his office. They could go to the county service officer. They could stop at any one of the claims offices at Fort Snelling that they'd all assist him and get him pointed in the right direction to pick up the services that he's looking for.
Any further questions from committee members? Mr. Holton, thank you. Do we have any? Were you just here for questions, gentlemen? Okay. Next, we have
Hank Sadler and Pete Phillippe from the Disabled American Veterans, members who should have gotten a handout that looks like this from Mr. Sadler. And as they're coming down, you'll see on the inside there's a discussion of the purpose and a little bit about the budget and the initiatives they have. Gentlemen, welcome. You could identify yourself and your position.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Hank Sadler. I'm the presently the state commander for the Minnesota Department of Disabled American Veterans. I have with me today Mr. Pete Phillippe, who is our supervisor at the National Service Office in Fort Snelling, who will have a testimony on his activities over there. And I also brought along our chief executive officer, our adjutant for the Department of Minnesota, Mr. Dean Ashman. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for giving me the opportunity to appear before this committee. I represent 18,000 disabled American veterans across the state of Minnesota. The DAV's credo is building better lives for America's disabled veterans. This is accomplished by numerous programs that provide support, encouragement, and a better life for the noble men and women who have been disabled while upholding world peace and freedom in the United States of America. Our purpose is accomplished in many ways, but at this time I would like to yield, Mr. Chair, to Mr. Phillippe to give you an outline and an overview of what his office does in Fort Snelling, and I'd like to finish up, please. Thank you.
Mr. Phillippe, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I would like to express my appreciation for allowing me the opportunity to appear before you, and thank you on behalf of the Department of Minnesota Disabled American Veterans for the cooperation and financial assistance that you've provided in the past. Without this assistance, we would have been unable to provide the services that we have. The Disabled American Veterans is chartered by Congress as the official spokesperson for disabled veterans and charged with providing free assistance and service to all veterans or widows, widowers, and dependents. The DAV employs the largest staff of professionally trained, accredited representatives of any organization. The DAV has 300 National Service Officers assigned in each Department of Veterans Affairs regional office throughout the nation. The Disabled American Veterans has 4 National Service Officers staffed here at Fort Snelling. We are all wartime disabled veterans. Throughout the year, we conduct informational seminars in various cities. These meetings are scheduled so the National Service Officers may explain to our veterans the various Department of Veterans Affairs benefits that are available to them. Our principal function is assisting and representing veterans for the United States Department of Veterans Affairs rating boards. We provide assistance concerning claims for entitlement to disability benefits, compensation, as well as hospitalization benefits, insurance, and education. During the year of 2004, the Disabled American Veterans filed 5,131 new claims for veterans and their dependents. This involved accepting 2,928 new powers of attorney and resulted in retroactive and annual federal benefits paid to veterans, their dependents, and family members residing in Minnesota of $65,605,674. This reflects a 43% increase since the last report I made to this committee, which I believe was in 2001. During the year of 2000, we are expanding the effectiveness, reach, and scope of the DAV National Service Officers through aggressive and timely initiatives, which include approximately 80 hours of service to Minnesota veterans through the Mobile Service Office program as they travel throughout the state. Outreach visits are being scheduled to our 34 chapter communities over the period of a year, and NSOs are making weekly visits to the 2 VA medical centers here in the state, that being Minneapolis and St. Cloud. We are also scheduling various seminars through National Guard military reserve units returning from the conflict in Iraq. We have one scheduled on the 22nd of March, and we have 2 more that we were previously scheduling. At this time, with the permission of the Chair, I'd like to call upon the Disabled American Veterans Department of Minnesota Commander Hank Sadler to provide us with some additional information regarding the Department of Minnesota DAV.
Mr. Sadler.
Chair members. Our purpose is achieved in many ways, and I'd like to highlight a few of our major accomplishments that the DAV is involved with on a daily basis, 365 days a year. This last year, DAV members provided over 13,000 volunteer hours serving veterans in our VA medical centers and our state veterans' homes throughout the state. Over 500 homeless and needy veterans were provided clothing and other necessities free of charge through our DAV thrift store, which is located in St. Paul. Cable and satellite TV program was provided by the DAV to all the clients in our five Minnesota veterans' homes by the DAV. The DAV Veterans Transportation Program provides free transportation to the medical centers to the sick and indigent veterans in a 50-mile radius of the Twin Cities and St. Cloud. This program is tied with the Minnesota CVSO Transportation Program that is statewide. Our offices provide logistic and administrative support to all 87 Minnesota counties, arranging transportation, appointment scheduling, prescription pickup, solving appointment issues, overnight lodging, and recruiting volunteer drivers, just to name a few. Our offices are located in the Minneapolis VA Medical Center and also in the St. Cloud VA Medical Center. The DAV Transportation Office in the medical centers is a primary hub for county veteran service officers, veterans, and their family members traveling from throughout the state of Minnesota for coordination for just about everything that comes up that involves the VA Medical Center. We are expanding our current transportation program at both VA Medical Centers in Minneapolis and St. Cloud to include more office hour coverage and also increasing the number of DAV vans used to transport our veterans. Allow me to give you a perspective of the impact and the size of this program. DAV volunteer drivers this last year provided over 29,000 individual rides to veterans to their medical appointments. DAV volunteer drivers drove over 1.2 million miles with these veterans, and the DAV volunteer drivers volunteered over 80,000 hours this last year. In closing, our DAV programs are extremely successful and touch thousands of veterans and their families on a daily basis. These programs are vital to the veterans of Minnesota, and the appropriation we receive from our state is essential to our continued success and expansion of these programs. Thank you again for affording us the opportunity to meet with you. Also, thank you for your continued support of our veterans and families in Minnesota. We owe them so much that can never be repaid. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Questions? All right, our final, thank you. Thank you for coming in. Our final testifiers are Jerry Kaiser and Julie Bailey from the Vietnam Veterans of America. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourselves and your positions. And proceed.
Members of the committee chairman, my name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the state president of the Vietnam Veterans of America. And this is Julie Bailey, our service officer at the Whipple Building in St. Paul, and Mr. Bob LeGubin, another one of our service officers. I did not have a prepared statement. I thought we were part of the Department of Veteran Affairs, but I am glad to talk with you. The Vietnam Veterans of America, we are probably the smallest organization, and we have started our Veteran Service Office program in 1997. And since that time, we only had a part-time person there until in 2002 we hired the second one. In that number of years, that first 5 years, probably served about 250 veterans who came in. And since that time, we have increased our client base by over 288%. And so now we have over 800. And the people that we have power of attorneys for. And each one of the veterans organizations has a separate niche for people. Now, the Vietnam Veterans of America, just by the name Vietnam, people seem to think that only Vietnam veterans would talk to us. Now, that is a majority of the people that do. However, we have Iraqi soldiers, Gulf War, World War II, Korea. We have a probability of doing a little bit better job where we deal with more PTSD things other organizations do, and each particular one has a special niche. And obviously, people who are members of the Vietnam Veterans of America, we also belong to the VFW, the American Legions, the DAV. I think I belong to every single one of them, and my dues each year seem to keep increasing. But what we are asking for, and it's inside Mr. Puglisi's budget, was an additional $5,000, which is, we get 15 now, and that would help us defer our costs to do it. We don't have buildings or pull tabs or gambling like the VFW, American Legions, and some of the other organizations. So the state of Minnesota's grant to us is very important. And the initial part of all the money actually goes to our veteran service officers at the Whipple building there. And that is a great resource for all the organizations, because they actually give us the offices, are provided for us, and phones, and it's an excellent situation for us. We appreciate the opportunity to sit and talk with you about it, and if you have any questions, I'd certainly entertain them.
Questions?
All right. Thank you for coming in today. We appreciate it. And thank you to everyone who came in to testify. We will probably have more discussion on this once we get into February. We're going to have the governor's budget items before us, and probably have our commissioner back again to give a presentation on a little more detail on the governor's initiatives. Members, next week on Tuesday, Mr. Jordal, what's on the docket?
Mr. Chair, we'll be handling our bonding recommendations next week.
Okay. So for, and we're meeting at 8:15, 8:30?
8:15. We're going back to our usual hearing schedule of 8:15, and we'll be back in our normal room in the basement. We are still going to be trying to figure out a tour schedule for the Ford building. I know that's everyone's favorite.
Do you suppose, Mr. Chair, they could give you the key and we could just go over there?
Probably wouldn't trust us, Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, right. We kind of talked about the list of bonding recommendations before the committee. Do we have that, or are there just a few?
Mr. Jordal, can you work with Ms. Roberts to get a list of all the bonding items before our committee? Are they in the packet already? Are they before?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ms. Roberts, do you have enough for everybody? Okay, Representative Solberg, Ms. Roberts has copies. Why don't we have every member of the committee get one right now? And then if the minority would be so kind as to let us know kind of what your priorities are, yea and nay.
Everything.
even the Ford demolition?
Well, I don't know about that.
We do have to prioritize some things, and you know, like I said, we don't have to blackball anything, but I think it would be helpful for the bonding committee if we actually did our job as a committee and don't just forward everything onto them. I think we should try to do our job in at least giving some suggestions that might help them.
Mr. Chairman, are you actually going to have then the individual bills that are referred to us in the form of them coming forward or present that to us?
Representative Solberg, what I think we're going to do is anyone who puts in a committee hearing request will be given a hearing, and then those people who don't will not get one. I think it would be helpful if Representative Anderson could come in for a little bit, potentially give a brief presentation with the World War II vets. I think it would be helpful, and Representative Leader. If you happen to see him, maybe have him submit a hearing request.
Yeah, so done that yet?
I don't believe so. And we can maybe just do a verbal one for him. But the other issue is, where is the volleyball center at on here? Is that not part of the mix? Has anybody introduced a bill on it?
A bill has been introduced.
Okay. Well, let's hurry up and get it done before someone does. With that, the meeting's adjourned.
The Rochester one, you mean?